The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.
Hell yeah.
All right, folks, it will be. All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. I have not only my favorite muskie fisherman on the planet, the dude, but I have...
I'm not your favorite muskie fisherman.
I have. I'm my favorite muskie fisherman. But I have everyone else's favorite muskie fisherman, the most important muskie fisherman in the entire sport, the guru. So what are you doing, guru?
Well, may all of you be enlightened tonight.
May you all be enlightened. The guru.
Well, the reason he's so good is because he's got a mustache.
Dude, so. That mustache. Chaz, you wait. The guru is going to be down here in Tennessee with me in like a week. Tyler.
Oh boy.
Me and you are going tandem stashes, bro.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be crazy.
Booker can't stand your stash power, so what I'm going to do is the first muskie we catch, I'm going to rock like the village people handlebar. What do you think?
I love it.
You got the power stash, I'll go with the handlebar, and we'll just completely rock it out and look like two creeps. So,
dude, I love it.
I'm there. So, anyway, speaking of Book Daddy, I texted him earlier. We were talking earlier. You guys know this. We've all been talking about it. We put it on the app yesterday. The enlightened minds in Canada have decided they're closing the border.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I have to. It's so frustrating. Because, I mean, we are opening up here. Things are improving here in the United States all across the board. And... you know, it's so low. I mean, I don't know. It's so low transmission in the outdoors. I mean, here we're talking about going fishing.
Yeah.
And, I don't know.
Listen, I'll say it. I'll say what everybody's thinking. You can riot in the streets, but we can't come up there and go musky fishing. I watched a dude break through the glass at Steve's Music in Montreal, steal $100,000 worth of guitars. But you can't come across the border and go muskie fishing. I'm going to just
there
say
have been
that.
All the, and there have been all the riots, too. And it's like, yeah, it's so stupid. It's political. It's all political.
Yeah, we'll stay away from the left and the right. But I'll say this. I'm jealous of the dude that stole all those guitars. I'm just going to say that. That's worth pretty. Listen.
But, I got to say one more thing. You know, because this, Joe and I were out filming yesterday, and we just sat there and looked at each other and said, well, and this is a Tyler Andrews line. Guess what's going to happen in Wisconsin this year? It's going to be a freaking beatdown. These muskies. I mean, Joe's going to have a tiller this year. I mean, whenever I get my boat back, which could be next year, these muskies are in big trouble in Wisconsin this year, and obviously in Tennessee. So it's like it's time to get creative, and it's time to slay some big fish this year on our home water.
Me and Joe talked yesterday after you guys got off the water, and we were talking. I said, this is the year to do what me and you have been talking about on the podcast and what everybody's been thinking. It's like, you know what? Learn that home water a little bit better. Focus on that and just kick the shit out of them.
Oh, yeah. It's bad. It's going to be bad.
It just is what it is. You can't do anything about it. You know, the majority of seasons, you're not going to catch me up there in November, period. You know, I'm way too hot-blooded for that. But, I mean, it's just one of these years where you go, you know what, focus on that, fish the states. I mean, we've gotten a ton of questions this week. We're really not even going to address too many of them as far as, like, where to go. Everybody's freaking out already in the last couple of days where to go, which, you know, we're not going to make too many assessments there. But, you know, it's that thing is focus down, double down on your home water. I mean, that's all you can do. I mean, but also, too, if you're down here with me, go see Chaz. If you're up there, come down here, see me. You can do some exciting things, you know?
I know that you and I are both in the same boat, Stephen. I mean, they're already coming. I mean, I'm busier this year than I...
Oh, my God, yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy. People are calling and texting and emailing, and it's like I'm getting just rando texts all the time, and I am booked right now, mm-hmm. you know? For a long way.
You know what? That's something we should say, though.
Which is great. For people that are trying to get out.
People that are listening to the podcast, if anything can warn you, because yesterday when that news broke, pretty much everything's starting to fill up. So if you're looking for a musky guide trip.
Dude, I had a guy book five full days just last night. Like just straight up 11 guys. I got to get multiple guides in on this thing. It's going to be crazy.
I hear you. And that's the thing is, like, if you had Canadian dates on the books, everybody and their brother is looking for somewhere else to go. Do it now. Me and he didn't even talk about that before the podcast. Yesterday was insane. My phone did not stop. Right? And it was literally
crazy.
Yeah. The story was, hey, we go to Rainy Lake every year on the Canadian side, but we can't. Hey, we go.
Everybody's saying the same thing.
Right. Yeah. So if you are in that boat and you are going, hey, I usually go to Lake X up in Canada, dude, don't wait around. Do not wait around.
Because I guess what Steven's getting at is guides are filling up so quick in the U.S. here. And if you want to get a good spot at a date that works with your calendar, you better call. You better text them tonight and bother them and see if you can get a response, because it's going to be tough to get on schedule.
The Musky Guru will take you, but it's like, what, $1,100 an hour, right, Tyler?
Basically, yeah.
My stuff is really nice.
That's the bro deal. Right.
do they even get to touch your mustache at the end of the trip or what?
No, not at all. You got to pay extra for that, man.
Dude, wow.
Dude, you have to pay money to look at the stash. Like, he does a photo op at the end of the trip. It's like you can pose with his mustache, you know, you can't touch it, period. Unless you're a hot woman. That's it.
That's an exception.
Hot womerns. I pronounce it womerns. I'm sorry. I'm down here. So anyway, so the Canadian government has screwed everything up yet again. I'm giving them a big clap. It's easy to be as liberal as you want when your next door neighbor is the world's biggest nuclear superpower. I will shut up now, and we're going to go to the first question. The first one up is from Ron. Ron says, what net do you guys recommend? Chaz, I'm going to go ahead and pop open the muskyshop.com.
Muskyshop.com. I mean, I'm gonna predict here what Steven, getting into brands,
period.
I'll just predict. No. I mean, usually on these nets, I could be wrong, but I'm just from memory going, the width of the hoop is generally like 34 inches wide on most of these nets.
You and I,
they're 34 by 40 is usually the dimensions of a decent musky net.
We both use the Frabel Power Catch 8425.
Yep, it's old. Mine's an old net.
Old school, me too.
And I zip tie it when it gets a cut or whatever.
Yeah,
and you can't tell the black zip tie looks like brand new. But you know, I think the thing when you're looking for a net, right, is you mm-hmm. you need some depth for unhooking a fish in the water, and you definitely need to know, like, if you're consistently fishing solo. I go out on a lot of solo musky trips mm-hmm. when I'm filming it, you know, different times of the year. It's got to be light enough so you're not, you know, you got to be able to lift it yourself. And that's something to think about when you're looking for a good net.
That net is, I own, there's the Drifter Predator XXL, right? I have that net. I have the Frabel Power Stow. I have a Ranger. And I have my dad's old Frabel Power Catch 8425, which is the same net you run, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's
it. Yeah.
I own them all. They're all out in the garage. I have four freaking musky nets, which is dumber than hell. And I keep coming back to that net, and that's it. And I just have given up, and I say, that's the net I'm using. I don't have issues with it. Like you said, the weight's right. The bag's not too heavy. Mine is covered in zip ties, dude. The same thing. I'm not even embarrassed. There's probably like 30 zip ties on that net.
Jeez.
That's just
it. Yeah, I'm the same. I'm the same. I mean, I don't know where they are, but I noticed the new
hole. Yeah, it's a piece of shit at this point. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the net that I use. Like, if you put a gun to my head and said, hey, you got to have one net, I've got multiple nets, that's the one. That is the one that I like as far as, like, it's not going to break. Hey, by the way, I texted you. Remember I said some shit about, like, a net mod or something a few days ago? Like, I just texted you out of the blue. The best thing.
Oh, that was me.
Was that you, Tyler? Okay, so.
Yeah.
You guys remember that Mondo Hondo, like, from 2 weeks ago? That big fish I got? It bent. It bent the handle. My client was standing on the handle, and that thing was bashing in the net, and it bent it. And so when I went to put it back, I couldn't get it through the yoke or whatever you want to call it. I went over to the local Home Depot and bought a paint extension, like a fiberglass pole. It's the best thing I've ever done. It's ridiculous because I've got like a 48-inch fiberglass handle now on that power catch net.
Oh, that's cool.
All I had to do was drill a hole for the little, you know how that little pin comes up and locks in the yoke of the net?
Yeah, yeah.
I had to drill a hole for that and shove that shit in there. Now I have
do that too. Well, mine's kind of like it's got its signature. It's got a little like
banged up. Yeah.
I was guiding a competitive power lifter like years ago, bagged a really nice muskie at night, and I'm like, hey, I don't know what his name was. Like, yep. Chris, step on the net, man.
Right,
and he goes, freaking smashed it.
Yep.
And I'm like, I didn't mean like bend the thing in a horseshoe, dude.
I know. You know?
And dude, that's what he did. So I bent it back as best I could.
Bro, you gotta still do got this. It there. You got yeah. it. I will send you. I will find out. I've got it. The old tag in the garage of what that was. It was literally just a paint extension pole. It's the best thing I've ever done because now you've got this, that fiberglass handle. It doesn't bounce, but when the fish is in the net, it can flex just enough that you don't have that issue.
Cool.
And I've got like people that they're not power lifters. They're power eaters. And they're stepping on that handle all day long because it lays in the bottom of a boat. So that's the net I rock. I've owned a bunch of them. Guru, what do you think? What net are you? You're using the same net, right?
I'm using, I do not remember the name. It's the same one that Joe uses. Chaz, do you know that one? The super lightning one? The real
He had a Frable Conservation Series muskie net. I don't think he uses that anymore. He's got I don't know what brand he's got now. I have no idea what it is, actually, to be honest.
I got the lightest Frable that they make. And I can hold it with like one hand, like my pinky can hold it. And it's just ridiculous to light.
I'll say this though. I was just looking here at Muskie Shop. There's this brand called Clam. It's a Clam Fortis net. They have a 31.5 by 29 by 24 inch deep bag for $109 at the Muskie Shop. That is ridiculously cheap.
Wow.
That is like, I think that's the net Pete Maine has been rocking. It's like this gigantic blue circle net. So, you know, to each their own, you know, Ron, and you want to know what net we use, that's sort of the consensus there. I don't think there's a bad net other than if I had to, like, if we ball this up real quick to summarize, the lightest and strongest is what I'm always going for. If you got to net it by yourself. So
Absolutely.
Well, up next, we have Jake. Jake says, hey, guys, thanks for answering my last question on a previous podcast about targeting bigger fish. He said, I couldn't take it anymore, and he watched the trailer for Blood Hook. I'm very sorry that you watched that.
Yeah.
Anyway, summarizing here, I'm looking. He says, my worst musky fishing injury happened recently when a musky spit a large topwater lure. It shot back in the boat and hooked me in the chest and in the collarbone. He said he had a bruise from jerking it back, and his buddy had to pull the hooks out. What is your worst full contact muskie injury? If this is not the Chaz Martin nipple bite muskie, I don't know what is. But tell me, what do you?
I've had two muskies. I wish we could like live feed a photo onto this. I know I
that
sent
might
Tyler
be the thumbnail.
Brutal. I was there for one of them. It was incredible.
Text me nipple biter. You have to text me that. That will be the thumbnail for the podcast.
Dude, I have one that like was a full out. It wasn't just the nipple. It grabbed the whole thing.
Yeah.
And
get a titty,
and
bitch.
This, the one. So one of my biggest fish last summer. It actually looks like it's going to go for my neck. I'm like, holy crap. It was bad. But yeah, the one with Tyler bit me in the nipple, and it was bleeding.
Okay.
It was bleeding. I looked under my shirt. I'm like, damn, it drew some blood.
Dude, Tyler, I might have told you. I don't know. So when I come off the water, I'll you know, gab with people or whatever. So it was like this week or within the last 10 days, my life has been a blur. Me and Chaz have both been living on our boats.
Oh, I know. God.
So this dude, we caught like a stellar fish. It's this father and son that were on the boat. We caught like a Mondo Hondo. It was a 51. The first fish of the day is a 51, right? And that's great. And like I was walking him through. He's an avid musky fisherman, hasn't caught a lot of big fish. And he pulls this thing up and he said, this thing's so easy to hold. He said, those little ones are the pain in the butt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, later in the day, we caught a 36-incher. That thing went thrashing. He drops it. It bounces off the deck of the boat with its mouth open, and its mouth hit my knee. And so I have little marks all the way around my right knee. So I have like six little marks on the top, six little marks on the bottom where its teeth just nicked me. And I went, I think I'm bleeding. And I look down, I'm just bleeding all down my shin.
Jeez. Can I share a story real quick?
No, you can't.
I'm boring.
No, what do you got?
I've been bitten a few times. I sent Joe and Chaz one like on my thumb that got like all tore up down to the bone. But what I was sharing was that I was figurating a muskie once, and I hooked it. And I went to step down. This is when I used to fish barefoot.
Uh-huh.
Never fish barefoot.
No, FYI.
I do not do it because there's baits everywhere. I go to step down, and I put my foot on a top raider hook, and it goes right through my foot. So now I'm fighting this muskie. I got a top raider in my foot. I'm like hobbling around. Nah. So I'm like, well, crap. I gotta net this thing and like take a photo with it. So I'm hopping on one foot, holding this net in the other, and I net this muskie. And I'm like, well, now what do? I just cut the hook, took a picture, drove home and ripped it out, and then went back out and caught another one.
Dude, I had that. Like I said, it's a blur, but it was in like the last 2 weeks. I had another father and son, and I keep those rails in the front of my boat with the baits hanging up, right? And this guy, I netted the fish in the front of the boat, and he went to reach down and get the fish and tripped up, and he had a Goldilocks with an ADOT through the back of his freaking calf, man.
Oh.
And I was like, whoa. He was like, I'm okay. And I was like, no, you're not. So I've got a picture of this guy, and I cut it with my Nip-X. So during the picture, he's got an ADOT sticking through his calf muscle. We went straight from there to like to the hospital.
Jeez.
Chaz, you probably do the same thing though with people. Tell people like, dude, this shit can go bad in a heartbeat.
Well, I keep a meticulous boat. And Tyler, you know, I mean, my lures, I have a designated place for all lures, and they're in the back of the boat, and they're pretty much never on the floor or the, you know, it's generally organized because absolutely. When you have folks that are very inexperienced, and which is great, that's what we're doing, this guiding is to get people into the sport and teach, but they don't know, you know, a lot about safety, especially when you get, you know, your adrenaline pumping. Shit can go wrong. I have to tell one, and this is a really quick one, but I still think this is, I was laughing so hard and I couldn't stop. I had two guys, and this is back when I threw bulldogs like crazy.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how this exactly happened, but I'll never forget the thud into this guy's crotch. I mean, it was like, it was something like, it was really
the thud
bad
into his crotch.
It was,
you say.
It was like a hollow thud. The guy on the bow, because that's how it worked. And we were casting off the port side. And so the guy on the bow is righty. And so if you're casting port and you don't push the button, and he forgot to push the button, and he takes the bulldog with all this momentum, swings, doesn't hit the button, and he just swings, and it literally on a full blast just goes right into the guy's nuts. And the guy, he falls over on the boat. Like, there's like a boom. And I look, and I'm like, oh no, that didn't just happen. And it didn't even stick. It just smashes it and bounces off. Then the guy fell down. And I'm like, God. Looking, and the other guy's looking, and we looked at each other. We're trying not to laugh because we're like, because it's like kind of serious. And the guy was just on the ground.
Chad,
man, is that dude? And he had to have just killed him.
Do you know why I got out of? Dude, okay, we're gonna get this is why they listen anyway for the tangents. So the reason a lot of people be like, why I like if I'm fishing a river or whatever, it doesn't matter because I'm gonna nose up, but I guide out of the front of my boat, right? And a lot of people mm-hmm. were like, why do you guide out of the nose? And I say, well, like, I'll fish a weed bed in reverse, all this stuff, I've got it down to a science now. So 2 years ago I was in the back of my boat and I'm bent over and I'm looking for something in another tackle box. And I took a mag dog to the ass. So this guy just puts a mag dog. He puts it straight back, like casting into the body of the boat, right? With like an 8'6" rod. And I am sitting there and I just get disemboweled in my left ass cheek with a mag dog. It's like somebody hit me with a T-ball bat right in the taint, dude. So I have a scar on my, no one wants to see this, but I have a scar on my left butt cheek from a mag dog. It hit me so hard that I literally,
that is brutal.
It was, I mean, it pulled me up. It was like, no, no, stop.
And oh my God.
It is just ridiculous. The other one, dude, I don't know if it's bulldogs or what, but I had these two ding dongs on the boat. And the one guy looks at his buddy, he said, "Are you gonna stop throwing that? I'll throw it." And the guy takes a bulldog and throws it to him. Right?
Oh.
And the guy tries to catch a bulldog. Do you know how he caught it? With the webbing of his fingers between his thumb and his first finger. And that thing just went straight through. He catches it, goes thump, straight through it, pierced him. And he looks at it and he's holding this bulldog. And I'm like, that is a dumb. I just look and said, that's the dumbest shit I've ever seen, dude. I said, I want to cut that out and we're going in. You know? So,
oh, my God.
Anyway. But, yeah, God, dude, that's the other thing. Like, Joe, I bet you Joe would say what, Tyson Muskie though? As far as like a fish that hurt him?
Oh man, he and I don't even want to hear some of his stories on these things. God, sometimes, yeah. But he's told me numerous stories of two muskies in the net at once at night and getting a depth rater in the hand and just bad. Joe has a lot of stories on that stuff. Dude, obviously, I got very lucky once, and I was like, the biggest wake up call ever, like probably a decade ago.
Uh-huh.
I got so lucky. This lady caught a big pike. It was like, mm-hmm. you know, for us in Wisconsin, it was a 34-inch northern on a rad dog spinner bait. I go to grab it behind the head, and he has a bigger pike, and I had a good grip on it. Boom! It moves. Ooh. The hook goes in to my between the webbing between my index and thumb, and just. It's like, and it was a big hook. It before the barb went in, it popped right back out. And that for me was, that's, you know, thankfully been my closest call with getting a big freaking hook in my hand.
I love this topic. This is the best topic ever because you just said that. And Tyler has seen it. Me and him laughed about it. I have a scar on my left thumb from a musky tooth, right?
Ooh.
And it was last summer. And my client, Randy, I know Randy listens to the podcast. He's hilarious. We were night fishing. It was hot. And I went to sort of pull this fish out, right? And it turns. This is probably like a 41. Who cares? You know, it's not a monster. My thumb.
Hey, speak for yourself. 41 and an Eagle River is a good one. Come
well,
on.
It's not like
it. I'm just kidding.
It's
not, I'm just kidding.
Anyway.
When you're in Tennessee, the land of giants. Come on, man.
Well, hey, buddy, it ain't. It's not the land of giants. It's I rarely say that I know what I'm doing. But
I'm just kidding with you.
But
I'm
anyway, it's the land of me, baby. Anyway, sorry. So this thing turns. I was pulling out of the net, and it turns, and my thumb goes in its mouth, and I just feel this tooth go in, right? And I pull my hand out. And I went, goodness gracious, it's bleeding. It's just bleeding buckets. So I get some alcohol and I touch my thumb. And I'm like, every time I touch it, it just hurts worse and worse. The tooth broke off of my finger. And so Randy is hilarious. He's from like deep south. Got a horrific accent on him. He's got pliers and he's trying to pull a musky tooth out of my hand. And every time he gets in there, he just jams it in deeper. And so by the end of this trip, I have duct tape around my hand. And he finally looks and he said, I don't know if we're going to catch any more fish, but it sure looks like you're going to bleed to death. So we need to go in. It just,
oh my God.
It bled for like 2 hours. And I just didn't want to admit it. I literally had to go to the hospital and get that tooth pulled out of me. I got home. I was like, this is ridiculous. This is the dumbest thing I've ever done. Anyway, I will shut up and go to the next one. Ryan asks, hey guys, love the podcast. Here's my question. I've never caught a fish in the figure eight on a glide bait. How do you guys work your glide baits in the figure eight? Do you make it dance around from side to side, or do you do a figure eight in the same way you would a crankbait or a bucktail? What do you think, Chazzarino?
Absolutely. So glide raiders, one of my favorites. And I have had, I think when muskies follow gliders to the boat in general, they've had a lot of opportunities, obviously, to eat. And I think they're very difficult to catch in the figure eight on a, I've had little success figure eighting muskies in a traditional manner. Generally speaking, glide baits when figure eighted traditionally are pretty awkward. They just don't really move that well. So what I've had pretty good success with this on walleyes, muskies and some really big walleyes and pike, is just the dead sticking. And I think you kind of alluded to it where you're kind of working it in a side to side manner and the bait's not really moving anywhere. That seems to work, on some fish. I'd rather do that. I have a better chance of getting them on that than a traditional figure eight. That's what I've found.
Dude,
so that's my answer.
I feel like if I'm at the boat side with a glide bait, it's not, okay, I would bet you're probably in the same neighborhood. On a bucktail, I feel 80-20. 80% chance I'm going to get him in a figure eight, right?
Yeah.
On a glide bait, I think it's 20-80.
I think that's very accurate. Like, if you don't really get a lot of them. When they follow it, it's like, it's almost, they kind of just stop and look at it. They've been following it the whole time. It's slower, and it's sometimes they pounce on it. Sometimes they just kind of, you know.
What I've done well with, now the glide raider it's tough with, but like hellhounds and phantoms though, I will straight up just let that thing drop. I'll free spool and let it drop down and then jig it up. Bop, 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 and let it drop. And you'll watch those fish come up with that bait and then back down, up and down in that fashion.
Dude, I do the same thing with the glide raider. It's some of mine, I mean, some of them are heavier and some of them are a little lighter, and you can do that with me. Exactly what you're talking about. That's exactly what I do.
And with the glide raider though, me and you, we mod those up though too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, some of them are heavier.
You know, your traditional glide baits, I try jigging them. I'll tell you, I don't have, and I hate it, and you've done it too. I know you've done it. Get a big fish next to the boat with a glide bait, and you just go, the chances of him eating this are just stupid low. I just never feel good on the figure eight with a glide bait. There's never like a guarantee.
Yeah, exactly. They're really tricky.
The only thing I would say is this is like, as far as like keeping that action going, when I get a fish to the boat, I shouldn't even say to the boat, when I'm just working a glide bait, I don't get it to the rod tip. I leave 24 inches or whatever kind of amount of line, because if I see a fish come up behind that thing, I'll walk them around the boat, though, too. And that's something you can make work. It's just it glide baits boat side. The only other thing that I've had
actually 100% success with glide raiders at boat side is when they follow in, right, and they're just sitting there looking at it. I straight up flash them a picture of the guru's mustache, and they just say, you know what? I'll eat it. On those instances, I've had 100% success. That's the one thing I'd recommend.
You know, the guru just reaches over the boat and hand grabs them.
Yeah. You know what would help? To with his thumb. If everyone wants Muskies to jump in their boat this season, you got to get the Musky Guru t-shirt or sweatshirt.
Oh, on my Musky goodness. You have to. I mean, Chaz doesn't know. I sent, like, it's not for sale, but I sent a very heinous Musky Guru shirt to Booker this week. So that's
awesome. Right. Oh, my God.
That's a shameless plug, though, Tyler. Thank you very much for the skillful plug. Now, in all honesty, guys, if you do want, like, some stupid Musky 360 merch, it is on the app. You can go to My 360. It's down there. We are literally making nothing on this crap. Tell me where you can buy a $12 t-shirt. Okay, you can't even go to Walmart and buy a $12 t-shirt. But you can buy a $12 t-shirt with Tyler Andrews' face on it that says the Musky Guru. But anyway, we got that on there. The next one up is from Ben. Ben says, I have an early generation Raymarine sonar unit with downscan and a small 7-amp-hour battery. So it's a 12-volt, 7-amp, okay. Could this be used as a cheap portable side scan unit if I rigged it to shoot sideways when fishing from shore or a kayak? How deep does the water normally have to be to get an accurate side scan image? I'm just going
to send that to the physics guy. Our physics and our chemistry guy over here. What do you think?
I'm just trying to understand the question. Can you just phrase it again? Is he talking about rigging it up with a?
What it is? No, dude. He's got an old Raymarine sonar unit. It will not work in the same fashion as a side scan.
No, it won't. No, it's not possible.
It's a matter of the beam. You're not going to get an imaging of that. I would just use it on your kayak as a down imaging. The side scan, the way that it works and the way that it spreads out on the water column and the way that it returns the image, what you would see, I'm just speculating. I've never done it, like, as far as like a Lowrance or an Eagle or a Raymarine, turning it sideways. You know, you're going to get a return of the nearest shoreline to your maximum depth. So if you're like 200 feet off the shore, it's going to say you're in 200 feet of water, right? So theoretically, you could see a fish there, but it is not what that unit's meant to do.
Yeah, that doesn't sound.
It has to do with the way the sonar beams are, like, shot out of the transducer. I think, like, the down imaging ones are more like a cone, and then the side imaging ones are more like kind of like a straight wall. I don't really know how to describe it good, but they're just different.
Tyler, you're more like a cone.
Thank you.
Anyway, Chuck,
I'm a cone head.
You're a cone. Chuck says, what are some tips for spooky muskies during the early season? What do you think? What do you do?
I would say, boy, spooky muskies, pick a cloudy day, even if it's stained water, to go after those dudes. And I would say low light, or it's low light meaning early morning, like at daybreak. Yeah. Like, you have to get out of bed at, like, you'd have to pull your butt out of bed at probably 4 a.m. or better than that early. I mean, you got to be on the water, like, before the sun comes up, or just fish late, fish the first hour of darkness, which early season may not be a great idea unless you've got warm water. So, you know, I would say my third option would be the triple or quadruple downsize. We were talking about that, Stephen, about, you know, rigging up with, like, you know, bass rigs and bass fishing setups. I mean, just super small stuff that when you're actually fishing for bass, muskies just eat them and destroy them. So it's like, that always is an option that I've caught. I've caught some of my best flowage fishes around around here on bass stuff. So that's my take on that. You know,
I mean, you know, you got to think, my thing is this, like, why do you think they're spooky? You know, is it because I see a lot of guys are like, these fish are spooking, but they're figurating from the middle of the boat and they see a fish and they rush up to the side. You know what I'm saying? So unless it's gin clear water, which does not sound like an early season thing to me, it might be a matter of body language. Like, be ready to figurate before you even get into that, and just make sure you're not, like, doing weird stuff. I tell my clients all the time, I say, you're going to spook a fish if you're not, if your body language isn't set up for it in the, it, from
so
the start.
So what you're getting at is so true, because it's kind of like, you know, folks will say something like they'll say, boy, man, the muskie's on my lake. I had a guy in the last couple of days say, you know, came on a guide trip to learn, which is important. And right. He says, boy, I can't catch a muskie in the figure eight. I have so many in the figure eight. They're essentially, you could say they're spooky. And, you know, it's like, well, I looked at his figure eight. I'm like, it's not good.
Nah.
His figure eight, the tactics were poor at best.
Right.
And so that's why the muskies seem spooky, is because your first turn of your figure eight's like, you know, it's like a hacksaw.
And a cute angle, yeah.
Yeah, you can't, yeah, they're all going to be spooky if you do that, you know. So, and I don't know if, you know, if our listener is, you know, we don't know the skill level, but it's something to consider, is how good is your figure eight?
Yeah.
You gotta
just assess that. I mean, there are spooky fish, but every time I hear spooky, I think bad mechanics. Every time.
Yeah, that's our guiding mentality. Yeah. Screams that, because that's what we see all the time.
Absolutely. We mean, you've said it on a ton of episodes. Be self-aware. If you watch a Joe Bucher video and you go, my figure eight is like not 90. If your figure eight is not 90% of what his figure eight is, then your figure eight sucks.
Yeah.
That's it. So, you know, how you're doing it. My big thing is body language. You look at these fish and you go, when they're 12 inches long, they got to worry about birds. My tall ass, I'm crouching down. I'm not trying to cast a shadow over. I'm not lunging towards the edge of the boat when I see a fish come in, you know. So
I want to add one more thing to this, though, because I'm thinking about this season. And I do think about, you know, because I have had a lot of fish this early season that I guess I didn't call them spooky, but I guess I could. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is, I would, you know, on a, what I would consider, you know, humbly speaking, on my well-executed figure eight, I have had plenty of fish this year. When we're talking, again, early season, cold water temps are, you know, in the 60s, and it's a true 60, even on a hot spell, and they'll come in and they'll almost eat, and then they just dart off. And it's like,
yeah,
it's not due to poor mechanics. And then I've tried, and then I throw a cast back at them, and they won't come in visually. I will see them on the side of my jeans, so they'll come in another time, two or three times, but they are, I guess I'll say, they are spooky. And I'm trying to think, what am I doing in those situations? Because it is tough. And it sometimes, I guess I'll say, and I don't think it had anything to do with my figure eights, what I've tried to do on those fish, and I, you know, many times it's unsuccessful. I've tried to come back at them at sunset or low light with a topwater. Because it's like kind of that idea of, I know where you are, so now I'm going to try to get you during a transition phase of light to dark, or, you know. So that's the other advice I would give is, you know, if your mechanics are good, and we'll assume they are, because we're not going to tell you they're not, but, you know, something like that, because they're tough to catch early in the year. You know, at least here in Violas Oneida County, it is not an easy thing.
No.
Getting muskies. And you know it when you look on Facebook and all your buddies aren't posting muskie photos.
Dude, when I sent you that little $5 I fooled around with. I mean, it was a mad. I had fish that were coming in. They could stay on a 500, and it was like literally a skirt difference.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going, really? You've got to be kidding me. You know, so sometimes, you know, it might not be a downsize. It might be a minute change if they're genuinely spooky. And I see what you know, you're doing the same thing, pre-qualifying of like, they're actually acting funky, you know? And so,
yeah, sometimes they just do. And I try same size, change the color. And then you're like, okay, well, you know, and what is it sometimes? I don't know, but I have had a bunch of those muskies early season that came in. They looked like they were going to crush it, as Tyler says. And
crush it.
They just aborted mission and left. And they'll still follow. It's the funny thing is those fish that were so close, they still follow. They won't let me see them. They're all on side imaging generally. So they'll come around the boat.
Mm-hmm.
I can see them, and then I'll cast something else at them, and they'll come around again, but they're never coming in close again. And I've tried, and then it's like all of a sudden you kind of early season. The problem is sometimes you get to that, okay, let's get them at sunset, Chaz. Well, by the time the sun is setting, and I'm talking early season here, you know, your air temps just plummeted. The solar peak is gone, and you just feel it. It's over. You had a shot at the fish, and it didn't go.
Yep.
And that she probably ain't coming back.
That's a fact, man. It ended. That's the game. That's the game. So, guys, we have four more. We're going to power through this. Guru, are you with us?
Absolutely.
He's there. We have the power of the guru. We got four more. Chaz is going to hang on for those. Folks, if you don't realize how tired we are, you haven't fished for 20 days straight. Coming up is Spencer. Spencer says, hey, I heard Steve mention that he recently switched to a longer rod. How big of a rod did you go with, and what do you think of the new line of super large musky sticks? To be honest with you, I just switched everything on my boat as far as rods. I actually told you this, Tyler, the other day.
Yeah.
So, in a pair of shoes, I'm 6'3", 6'4", right? So, it's all about height equivalency. But I went with a 9'6" rod. It's the best thing I've ever done. Like, it is saving my back. I can cast. Dude, I can cast a top raider. Literally, Chaz, I could probably put a top raider in your boat from where I'm standing right now if I had enough line on the rod.
So,
I can cast, you know, plugs really far, but it is actually my lower back was what it was because 8'6" was always the thing. You guys have heard it on other podcasts where I'm going 8'6", 8'6", 8'6". You know, I've mentioned I extended stuff. So I went with a 9'6". It's great. I mean, it's really good. The physicality's a little bit less. The figure eights are ridiculous. I mean, I can figure eight pretty much the length of my boat if I need to. And the thing that I like, and I told you this, Guru, the other day, is that my lazy figure eights are better. Any musky fisherman would be a liar if he said every figure eight he ever did was good. You know, I mean, I'm far too late. I'm the opposite of Chaz Martin. You said your boat is pristine. Mine looks like Raleigh and Helen's was like pipe bombed. You know, there's shit everywhere. It just like I go through bait ADD. I'm like everybody else where it's just like by hour number six, I'm like, nothing's going to happen. And I'm doing lazy J's and I'm doing lazy figure eights. That 9'6", that extra length has helped me. Like, even a bad figure eight is better than what I was doing with an 8'6". So, when I know a fish is coming in, it's ridiculous. So, I went with a 9'6". I switched all my client rods over to 9'3". And clients are bombing casts if they need to, and they're doing really well with their figure eights because it's forcing that rod tip down. So when you go and you go in the corner on the outside, it's way wider. Even with smaller fish, our turning radiuses are better.
Now, I have a question.
Lay it on me.
I mean, so most of my, the longest rod I take for clients, I have a bunch of 8'6". I guess I do have a couple nines. I do swap them in occasionally. But, you know, again, I use the 8'6" primarily for this reason. I want to hear how this happens for you, honestly, guiding-wise. When I've got, you know, two people in the boat, there is, you know, sometimes there's a little overlap. And we work on kind of staggering casts. But three anglers in the boat on my – and we have the same length boat. Mm-hmm. With an 8'6", you know, there's – you know, it's kind of a crapshoot on figure eighting sometimes. Like, everybody's doing it – well, at least two people are doing it at once. And, like, the baits are, like, kind of going by each other. How does it work with a 9'3"? Like, are your people, like
– It's not an issue.
Honestly –
We're not, we haven't, I could put a bait, you know, I got big old monkey arms. I could put a bait in front of the guy in the back of the boat if I wanted to. It's not become an issue at all. It actually, to be honest with you, nobody's like going wider. We're just going deeper and higher. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Like it's one of those things of like, you're driving that bait down because, and I'm talking lazy figure eights. I'm not talking this. I'm fired up machine gunner stance stuff. I'm talking run of the mill. No one really cares. We're sitting there talking about whatever, and we're just going through the motions. It's not an issue. It really isn't because you're just going deeper. I've not had a singular problem. The one thing I like about as far as a guide standpoint is I know the baits are higher in the air. There's less of them are going to hit me. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
I
mean,
so I like it. I didn't think I would. If you would have asked me a couple months ago, I would have said that's way too big. I dig it. And the hook, I told Tyler this other day, dude. I set the hook on a on that little $5, the 500 series, right? I set the hook so hard on a fish, I ripped a streak in its face because the amount of leverage I have. It was scary. I felt bad. I was like, if I had not turned its head, I would have lost it because I opened just a gash on its head because it hit about 10 feet off the boat. And when I went to set, I always set hard and I just jacked that thing because I've got a longer lever essentially. So more power is translated. It's harder, it's faster, whatever. I mentioned on that last podcast with the guru, I like it. You know, it might not work for everybody else, but like you said, you know, if you got somebody right up on you and you're like shoulder to shoulder, it could be an issue, I guess. But I mean, if you're spacing things out and sort of timing your cast, it's not a big deal.
Well, I you know, the other thing that I've been thinking about going to is I'm going back to 5.3s.
5.3s, baby.
Yeah. You know what? I want to make it hard. And, you know, I want the old pool cues back, the old ugly sticks. And, absolutely. You know, I'm going to try it for a little while.
You ever worked a glide rater with a pistol grip? it's one of those things. I mean, I would bet though, as tall as I'm not like me and Tyler are relatively the same height. It's not like I wouldn't think like a 9-footer would be that different if you're sub 6 or something like that. I mean, I just like it because I sit here and go, I could do a wonderful figure eight with an 8.6, but my shitty figure eights are still good.
Yeah.
I mean, we all do it. We all do shitty figure eights. I've never had a guide client where it's like every figure eight was great. And I know as a guide, I'm sitting here chewing on a sand. Most of the time I catch a fish, I'm chewing on a sandwich looking at a bird, you know? So if it's helping those, God. Anyway, next one up is from Tim. He said, I'm new to musky fishing and Mille Lacs is 15 minutes away. Any tips on baits or strategies to get me started would be greatly appreciated. So he's on phenomenal water. What are some starter tips for Tim there?
Well, I think that, I mean, of course, your basic stuff, we've talked about, I always thought this was a question. We've had similar questions, Steven.
Yeah, we've got some people around there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we've had some similar questions, and outside, we won't go to this because we talked about the easiest thing would be to hire a guide. But if you're doing this on your own, you know, obviously getting your lake maps and looking at, I don't know what time of year we were discussing.
I would assume now, you know, as far as
okay, you're kind of like
question.
The early summer period. You've got to like look at a map and look for structures that are going to be holding fish. You got to be able to predict. I mean, there's got to be. I guess what I'm saying is, small lakes and big lakes. I mean, I guess there's some generality as far as like types of structures that hold fish during this period. And it's like big lakes, it's the kind of the same types of things on big lakes, except the structure's just bigger.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, like you look at like North and South Twin, which is like 4,000 acres versus a 300 acre lake here in Three Lakes. It's like, I'm still going to look for the same types of things, but on North Twin, just the size is much larger. And I'd say the same thing applies to Mille Lacs. In some ways, it's not like you're reinventing the wheel necessarily.
No, they're going to be. And what I would tell him, I mean, if he's new to the sport and that's the closest musky lake there, master bucktails. Start there.
Yeah, and it's a ridiculously great musky. You're
catch
starting
a fish,
off on awesome water to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Start with your bucktails. You know, bucktails and topwater. Can't go wrong there. Then you go to crankbaits and you start there. That would be my game plan. I would bet you if you put in enough dog hours on Mille Lacs or in a bucktail, you're going to catch a muskie.
Absolutely.
That's what I would do. That would be my game plan. If you're genuinely new to the sport, get a 700, like my bare bone. Like if you're like, you can have a singular muskie bait. I'm going to throw a 700 Bookerdale. That's it. You know, that would be the one. Start with something like that and throw that shit until you catch fish.
And like, you know, I think, and if it's anywhere like here in Wisconsin, I mean, I don't know, it might be different everywhere else. You know, call up some bait shops or, you know, you live 15 minutes away from Mille Lacs, you're probably familiar with some local bait shops. Like most of these folks that work there, like if you're anything like Raleigh and Helen's or, you know, the Muskie shop, it's like, these folks, they're not going to tell you the number one spots to go to, but if you have no idea what you're doing, just ask some of the professionals that work at these sporting shops to, hey, can you lead me in the direction of like one or two starter spots? And I bet you like these guys wouldn't blink an eye to show you kind of area to go to. And then, like Steven said, throw some basic stuff, but you know, they'd be willing to shoot you in the right direction, you know, a phone call or just stopping in person, buy a couple lures and then say, hey, some stuff, support a small business and then ask them for a tip.
Don't go in the store and ask for information without buying something. That's a bait store no-no.
Exactly. You know, on these get some tackle.
Don't go to Cabela's and ask. Go to Jimmy Joe Jack's Bait and Tackle by Mille Lacs, and I don't know what store's there, but
exactly. Yeah,
spend some coin. If you're brand new to the sport, again, I'll tell you, man, you can go from a brand new angler to I know what I'm doing with a guide trip really quick. I'm sure there's phenomenal guides around Mille Lacs. That might be the best money you ever spend. And I mean,
dude, Thompson Family Radishes is starting to guide on the Lacs
Thompson Family Radishes, folks. The best radishes in the game. Listen, I provide free radish sandwiches on the boat daily. Those are provided by the Thompson Family Radish Farm. But, you know, and we're not. I got one sponsor, folks. It's the best I could come up with. No one else would touch me other than Thompson Family Radishes. They're delicious when you got one in the net. Thank you very much. What's a good like tagline for that? What would you like if you're pulling a John Gillespie, right? You know how he's like, fire up the Johnsonvilles. If you were sponsored by a radish company, what's your tagline?
Time to cut into a radish.
Chop me up some radishes.
You know, I don't. What is it? You know. When they're chomping, I'm munching on Thompson Family Radishes. You know, what do you do? Sorry, folks. We've all been smoking PCP all night long. Anyway, so we've got two more. The next one is this. He said, Steven, how do you modify the dancing radar that was in the latest Joe Booker video to become subsurface? Is this a new lure that's coming out that you can't give the info on, or can you fill us in? Flatly what that bait was. This is from a Booker video. That is a dancing raider that I drilled a hole in. I filled it full of it. I have like no clue how many split shots I put in there, but I put a bunch in there so it'd sink and sort of suspend. And I put a 10-inch Kalins on the back. And so it might come out. It might not. Joe's talking about it. You know, all the coronavirus stuff. Who knows? Like, it might be next year. So we made that thing into a jerkbait. You guys, the dude and the guru, know more than anybody. And Joe, of anybody that plays with baits, is probably me. So I'll drill a hole in anything. I'll tell people this. It's like, if you're having problems catching a fish, start fooling with your baits. There's no magic sauce. That bait was just it was invented out of frustration, to be honest with you, because I was having fish that wouldn't hit and I went, what if I did this? So it might come out, it might not. Anyway, the last question, we have another new angler. Tim says, I'm brand new to the musky world and very excited to start getting into this sport. He says, something I've always wanted to do.
That's awesome.
My first trip is to Eagle River. I think I've got two guys on there. He said, I was going to fish the muskie tournament, and it got canceled, but we're still heading up. We're going to fish on Kentuck. What six baits would you buy for this time of year to fish on Kentuck in Eagle River?
Wow. I mean,
Can I ask a question real quick? Why is there no Y on the name of that lake? Why didn't they just call it Kentucky? Because Kentuck sounds stupid. Okay, I'm just going to say it. Put a Y on it and call it Kentucky. I digress. Sorry. Moving on.
Well, you know, I think I don't want to be so generic, but I'll take the JBO lineup that I mean. I think it's the usual stuff I always, you know, throw in. You know, it's the same stuff that you would. And again, I know, Tim, you're new to the sport, so, you know, you got. I just won't throw names out there, but you got to have a top water. You got to have a small minnow bait, jerk bait. You got to have a blade. You got to have a deep diver. You want to have maybe a glider. I mean, if you're going to have six lures and maybe a some sort of plastic lure, you might want a tube or a doosa or a dog or, you know, I mean, that's easily six, maybe not even. You might maybe a walk the dog. Top water is always a good idea. Six lures is a lot. You can do a lot of damage with six different lure styles or types. I mean, maybe a slick. Tons of stuff. I mean, gosh.
I mean, and
I'll just end mine to say this. And this is, and you know, the muskies we had today on my guide trip were all on Top Raiders and 500 series booger tails. And that's, you know, I mean, those two lures are early season. I mean, they account for so many fish in my boat. It goes for the Eagle River chain. It goes for Kentuck. It goes for just about everywhere I'm fishing right now. So the 500 series, though, is a rule in my boat. Somebody must be throwing a 500 series. Otherwise, you're missing fish.
I'm not going to comment because the name of the lake is stupid. So, Tyler, you follow this up. What should he be throwing on Kentuck?
I basically had the same answer as Chaz. Chaz covered it pretty much perfectly. I mean, there's not much else to say.
Thanks, Ty.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that was. Well, I have nothing. I have nothing.
Then
to
I
say.
Will comment and say this: if he's a new muskie angler, here's the one thing I would comment. Right, if he's brand new to the sport, as far as those baits that are like killers on straight retrieve, though. Because you said it, Chaz, with the 500, right? Straight retrieve. JB Radler, you can kill on straight retrieve. Top Raider, you can kill on a straight retrieve. Jointed Shallow Raider, you're going to kill on a straight retrieve. Baby DR, you can kill on a straight retrieve. And as far as what? Goodness, what would else cover that? Because that's cranks, that's deep cranks, shallow cranks, topwater, bucktail. What else would be a good straight retrieve bait that would work?
You know, I would say, you know. I'll just say this, and this is a clap, but if you're new to, well, I don't know. I'm getting that guide brain kicking in. Yeah. But if you're new to muskie fishing, if you're really new, make sure your trolling motor's charged. I mean, just basic stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, true. You're going out to, I mean, you know, around here, Kentucky Lake's not.
It's not,
call it a medium sized lake, but it's decent size. I think it's like, you know, 900 acres or 1,000 acres. It's about 1,000 acres. And it's kind of like, you know, when you're going out to a body of water like that, you do need to have, you know, even if you're drifting, just make sure you got the basics covered, like trolling motors charged, all your gears ready. We were kind of talking about, Nipex or, you know, bolt cutters. I mean, like, that's the basic stuff that you need to have around. Yeah. Even, you know, I don't want to, I know you probably have that, Tim, but, you know, I'm just saying, if you're getting into the sport and that's exciting, make sure you've got like all the important stuff, the release equipment, you know, you're ready if you do get a big one, which is very likely, you know.
Absolutely. So, well, guys, because I'm so tired, we're going to work on wrapping up, but what are you guys seeing right now as far as that northern Wisconsin stuff? I'm hearing it's firing up a little bit. Don't
Ty, you or me?
Don't jump it. God, don't jump at once.
It's been firing up for me. All right, I'm jumping in. Things are heating up here. In the Eagle River area, no doubt. I mean, we did have the spooky muskies, if we want to call it. We dealt with a lot of tough stuff for the last 2.5 weeks. But right now, there is a consistency, finally, a consistency with hooking up. You know, a lot we are catching and I'm having clients mess them up and whatever, but regardless of what's happening, we're hooking up with fish and we're not doing anything that is groundbreaking. But I will say, you know, we're catching them right now, casting small blades. The top water bite has definitely been a factor for me. The crankbait bite has been a factor. We're catching them on shallow rivers. And the other thing that's been a factor is trolling, you know, and staying versatile, you know, and you know, making sure to also, I've had days where the weed bite is really good. And I've had also days when the rock bite is really superior. And rock bite doesn't just mean crankbaits. I'm talking top waters over rock reefs. So making sure that, you know, this early season thing, don't put yourself in a hole on weeds, you know, it's not all weeds. Make sure to hit timber. The muskie I caught with Joe a couple of days ago was a deadfall muskie. You know, there's muskies still relating to, there's muskies that are still fresh off the spawn. You got to remember, like, you know, lake wise, you know, here in Wisconsin, and I'm sure, you know, in the northern, you know, area here, you got muskies. There's late spawners. There's muskies, you know, you'll still see them spawn. I know in the deep, clear lakes up here, they are currently still spawning. I know that for a fact. I've talked to some guides that are fishing your gin clear lakes. They are currently spawning. So it really depends where you go up here right now. Not all muskies are eating and post-spawn.
Dude, I love what you said, though. You said we're not doing anything groundbreaking, but what popped in my head when you said that, muskie fishing is not about being groundbreaking all the time. It's about doing what's appropriate.
Yes, yeah.
And
yeah,
it's tough because you get excited. You go, I want to throw double eights. I want to throw double tens. But the guys that are scoring, and they're scoring consistently, they're throwing 500 Booker tails. They're throwing this small stuff.
Exactly. You know, I mean, so, and there's definitely circumstances where you can. I mean, I had a real big fish go after a double eight a day or two ago. But again, I was on a cast back, and I'm trying to, you know.
Right.
It all depends. It all depends on your water and what the status of those fish are. I mean, your water temperature up here can still vary a ton by lake, you know. So it just but again, I think that's what I'm seeing.
What do you think,
Tyler? I know you had some top water muskies going this week.
I started muskie fishing kind of like hardcore this week, and I got one fish on Monday on top water. I've been raising them on top waters, catching them on top waters, and throwing 500s. I've not had any success on crankbaits, unfortunately, yet, but things are starting to heat up for me, at least.
Yeah,
Are you
like your top water fish, you're moving and stuff like that? Is that pretty high speed, or is it just like a sort of a medium, sort of plotty?
I'm just doing like a medium speed. I'm not doing anything fast or anything crazy because it's too early for me to speed things up. I'm just doing moderate speed stuff.
You're the guru. I thought everything you did was fast and crazy.
Wait, Steven.
Yes.
Can we please have a word of
wisdom
right now?
We're
going to
end on it. I think, Tyler, you're going to end the show with a live guru's words of wisdom.
You want one right now?
Do it, baby.
The guru says the best things in life smell like fish.
All right, folks. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next week. I promise you, it'll be better than this burning trash of shit.
The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Booker Outdoors, the number one name in big fish products, and The Muskie Shop.